Today's program was brought to you by VisitNapaValley.com, the official page for travel to the Napa Valley, America's legendary wine, food, arts, and wellness capital. For more information, visit www.visitnapavalley.com.
Check, check, mic, check, 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 check.
Are we allowed to curse?
Wow.
HeritageRadioNetwork.org proudly presents Future Food Leaders, Daniel Holzman and Michael Cherneau, The Meatball Shop. Childhood friends Daniel Holzman and Michael Cherneau are the guys behind The Meatball Shop, a beloved New York City dining destination with now over six locations. It's obviously famous for its meatballs, but also as a late-night hub and casual dining trend-setting institution. Michael Cherneau began his professional restaurant career in 1996 behind the bar of popular nightclub Life on Bleecker Street in New York City. Daniel Holzman, on the other hand, started his cooking career at the age of 15 at Le Bernardin in New York City and stayed there for 4 years until attending the Culinary Institute of America. Together, they're one of the most charismatic, charming, and successful culinary duos in the food world today. This is Dan and Mike in their own words, as interviewed by Dorothy Cann Hamilton on Chef Story and by Aaron Fairbanks for this recording.
Yeah, we met when we were 13. It was kind of an arranged marriage. Dan and I, our mothers both kind of worked in the same field and very close to each other. Actually, my mother went to the doctor that Daniel worked for, and Daniel's mother went to the dentist that my mother worked for.
He grew up on 87th and 2nd, and I grew up on 83rd and 1st, and we'd meet in the middle.
Out of all of our friends, Dan and I always had a job, but out of all of our friends, Dan and I were probably the brokest as far as family's concerned. But when it came to like a personal level, I always had money. Always. I never didn't have money. Really, if I was going to talk about dog walking years, I mean, I started walking every single dog on my block when I was 10 years old. I put signs up in every single laundry room in the buildings up and down the street, and I would sneak into the buildings. I'd put a sign up, you know, with my phone number on it, and I was kind of up to making money from a very young age. I gravitated towards the front of the house right off the bat, and they gave me a job as a busboy. And so I started bussing tables there, and then I found out that I really enjoyed that like hustle bustle of running around and doing it, and being the youngest guy by far was just fun for me. And so I landed in most jobs as the youngest by 10 years. And so I knew somebody who worked in a nightclub. She was like, you know, I kind of hung out with older people when I was young because probably of the restaurant business. But when I was 14, 15 years old, I had a friend who was working in a nightclub, and she got me a job, doing flyers. And then when I was 16, I got offered a job as a barback, and I started kind of really working in the nightclubs. At Life.
And that's like the hottest club in the city. Everybody wanted to get in. Mike was 15 years old, just there.
Yeah. You know, at 15, 16 years old, I was making, you know, $1,000 a week.
The first time Daniel Holzman and Michael Cherneau really joined forces was when they worked together at the New York vegan restaurant Candle Cafe as teenagers. That would be the launching point for their future collaborations.
While I was working at the Candle Cafe, a friend of ours, her father was the maitre d' of Le Bernardin, and so he kind of saw us working over there and got me a job working at Le Bernardin in the kitchen because I told him I was interested in cooking. So I was maybe 14. The skills I learned at Le Bernardin translate directly to meatballs. It was from Le Bernardin to Paladin. At Paladin, I did my externship at the CIA.
Wow.
And
wow.
then it was San Francisco bound or Vegas or something.
So and you went
LA.
You worked at Aqua
Jardinier, the fifth floor in the Canton Place, and just fancy place, fancy restaurants, mostly fancy restaurants. I really desperately wanted to leave New York so badly. I just wanted to see something else, and it was like I was 19 and not the most healthy lifestyle for a 19-year-old boy by himself. I had a motorcycle without a license, and, you know.
And then when I was 19 years old, I moved out to L.A. with Dan. We both moved out there, and I worked in a couple of restaurants out there. And then I came back to New York because L.A. was just a complete nightmare for me. I mean, I was a maniac at that stage in my life. Partying, crashing cars, just being a real, you know, nuisance. And then I moved back to New York, and I got my first, or not my first, but I got a restaurant gig. And I opened up a restaurant in Soho called Wu Le Yok as the opening bartender there, and I bartended there, and it was actually really fun for me because I learned about a cuisine that I knew nothing about, which was Korean, and I really got into Korean food, and I really enjoyed that, and I worked there, and then I just started working in restaurants, and then I worked at a wine bar. I was heavily into wine. I really enjoyed wine, and so I worked at a wine bar, and I learned a lot about wine, and I was able to really be a part of that project in the Lower East Side. When Clinton Street was kind of like when 71 Fresh Food was there and when Wiley just opened up. And so there was this wine bar called Punch and Judy, and it was a great place. And then after that, I got offered a job at Frank Restaurant, which was like the hottest restaurant in the East Village. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to go work over there. And I bartended there, and I stayed there for 8 years. And that restaurant was actually where I put together the initial group of guys that believed in us to open up the meatball shop.
I would come back to New York, and I would eat at Frank every single time I come back to New York, you know, for the free food. and I never knew that they had a menu until very recently. I didn't even realize they had a menu because you'd sit down at the bar and Mike would tell you what you were going to eat, and he would do that to everybody. And he knew every single person that would come into the restaurant. It was amazing. Everybody that would walk through the door, he knew their name. And if they had been there once before or, you know, were a regular, they were going to be a regular because, you know, he made them feel like they were special. And if they were bringing a date, they could feel like, you know, they were the coolest person because it was a hard place to get into. But everybody found a seat around the bar. And there were 11 seats at the bar?
11 seats.
11 seats
actually
at the bar.
Actually, 11 seats and 3 deuces across the bar.
But he managed to get a lot of people sat down and fed and taken care of. And everybody loved him.
We knew that we wanted to open up a restaurant that was originally it was like a $45 check average. I was going to sit down, you know, kind of eat what the chef is cooking kind of place. And we started looking for restaurants for it. And this one restaurant that we found that we were very close to making a deal on, thank God that deal fell through. But this restaurant had a little side window, and it was on Bleecker Street, and it was just east of the subway on the east side. And you know, that side window was also right next to a very busy bar. So there's always people hanging outside of the bar. And Dan and I, while we were kind of, you know, making the deal on the restaurant, we said, well, how are we going to feed those people that are outside of the bar without having them come into the restaurant completely hammered? So we were kind of walking around the East Village, Lower East Side, seeing what people were eating late night. We wanted to do something quick, something simple, something easy, right out of that side window. And, you know, I, at Frank Restaurant, would eat my meal almost every night was a bowl of the meatballs that they made there and the red sauce, which was incredible, a side of broccoli and a side of spinach and some beets. That's what I ate every night. And so when we were walking around, and you know, I just said, how about meatballs? And Dan said, smart.
Just just luckily we had a really good story because we were, and it's a true story. So we were best friends from high school who always had a dream of opening a restaurant together. And I think people can kind of get behind that. I know that if somebody told me that story, I would want to go and support them and try that out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, ideally you come to the restaurant and the food's good. So you mm-hmm. say, wow, I want to come back. And then, you know, you get a great experience. And I think we were just so lucky on so many levels when we first opened up, with the timing and the
so lucky.
Economy was poor. So and because the economy was tough, this was a date that you could afford that was still cool. I mean, there aren't too many restaurants where you can take a first date and not feel like a cheapskate and get out for under, you know, $25 or $30 in the city. But here you can have a glass of wine and you know, a meal in a really comfortable, super cool environment.
It's all about experiences. Like, it's about one person, we like to call them guests, from the minute they open our door to the minute they leave. All the things that we do in the office, in the kitchen, on the floor, delivering meatballs, you know, with our trucks, every single thing that we do is there for that one experience, that, you know, 52 minute long experience that we do on average now 2,400 times a day, right? That's like, we have to, you know, it's so crazy to think about that, you know, it's, and that is what drives everything. The minute somebody opens up the door of a meatball shop, walks in, is greeted, is brought to a table, is delivered water, is asked what they'd like to eat and brought through the menu, is food drops on the table, they eat their dessert, they get the check, and then they walk out of the restaurant. And everything that Dan and I do and have done up until this point is to perfect and make that experience incredible. All the things that come along with that, there are so many moving parts to that, so many, that it's our, the tangibility of that for Daniel and I, right now sitting in the seats that we are, is far away. It's far away because we don't, you know, all the things that we do are there at ultimately to perfect that experience and make it the greatest possible for the guest, but you know, it's just like when I sit here and think about that, I'm like, wow, it's just so crazy that's what our job is. Our job is to perfect the 52 minute experience at any one of our restaurants.
People that's never happy with myself, or I feel like I've never gotten to the end goal. I'm never winning. It's always like there's more, it can be better. And as we've grown the business to 6 restaurants, you know, losing control of making every single meatball by hand is very, very hard. And watching what I believe, you know, the quality roller coaster of seeing one day, shit, these meatballs, the salads, the vegetables are not up to my standards. I'm embarrassed that, you know, that I'm not able to keep the quality where it is a great challenge. Learning how to work with people and manage them and teach and train and has been worth every minute, you know, because at the end of the day, I have very well proven that I can personally make a good meatball. It's a whole different story when you have a team of people that are motivated by different things to give them the same passion. That keeps me really well. You know, Mike said it best the other day. He goes, you know, we don't hire on a resume. We hire on a smile, like someone that can look you in the eyes and give you a handshake and connect with you. Having a machine is no longer a fun place for people to eat in. So you need the different characters, the people that are going to act out. And some of that comes with, you know, like people, maybe they show up late because they're a little bit difficult as a human being. But with that, if you're willing to give people a chance to be themselves, you get something that's very beautiful. And we're so proud to employ people that come from all different walks of life because they add to the quality of the team overall, right? So we've got people that are really great, strict business people that just want to record numbers on a spreadsheet. That's what they want to do. They, like, love that shit. They get off on being like, I fucking inputted 100,000 numbers and they were perfect every time. And you're like, God bless you, because that is so gorgeous. We need that terribly. You also need the person that's going to sit behind the bar and commute, you know, talk to the people that are eating there. And you know what? That person might not be great at being as disciplined, but they certainly are adding as much value, if not more. So that's it, right? We have 300 people. It's very easy to greet somebody and give them a big smile and a hug and welcome into your restaurant. It's really hard to get somebody else to feel that same ownership, right? It's like for Mike and I, someone walks in. Yeah, of course you're fucking saying, "Welcome to the meatball shop. We're so stoked to see you," because we're the first person and they're the first person. There's no anything else. Now there are a lot of people involved, and those people, it hurts, you know, it breaks your heart when you see the bartender hanging out with the server talking at the end of the bar, and someone walks in and no one really says hello because they're talking about what they're talking about. But at the same time, if you put yourself in the shoes of being a bartender or a waiter, like, why do they give a shit? How do you get inside of their head, and why should they give a shit? Well, you can't just say, well, they should fucking give a shit because we're paying them to do that. Because if you do that, you're lost. Like, no one's going to conform. How do you make it worth their while to truly care about something that might not be their number one priority in life? Because your job doesn't have to be your number one priority in life. And if it has to be, well, then you got to pay people and you got to motivate them to make it their number one priority. And that's not something that we want to or can do. It's not like we're going to be like, great, you know what? I'm going to make it worth your while to be the number one host in the world. So I'm going to pay you $1 million a year and give you your life's potential to do this. It's like, no, I'm going to hopefully make it worth your while to care because you have the self-respect to do it. People come back to the meatball shop, hopefully because they had a great meal and experience. But they have to discover the meatball shop in the first place. And we're really pretty well known in New York at this point. So, you know, New York gets tons and tons of tourists and people are constantly moving here. And every one of those that knows about the meatball shop before they come is one more person that we get to, you know, feed our delicious balls to. Dude, I want to be famous in Japan like nobody else. That's where it really counts. You know what I'm saying? Like Elvis wasn't Elvis until he went to Japan, and then I was like, oh shit, imagine that people could be opening meatball shops all over the world. It sounds so great, and you're like, and we'd make so much money, and they'd be opening them, and they would be everywhere. But we're like, you know, for all the fucking pomp and circumstance, we have 6 restaurants, which is amazing, but it's not like we're fucking Chipotle. We have 6 restaurants, and we're just actually hand rolling every single meatball, so we're not quite there. You know what I'm saying? It's different. For people that can do that, that have a system that's so easily replicatable that they can teach other people to do it well enough that they're still proud of their brand even though other people are doing it for them, like we're not in a position where we're ready to, like, our shit is not that simple. It's not like, hey, all you do is fucking open the plastic bag and you dump the meatballs out and the next thing you know, people are happy and they give you money and then you open another one. It's like we are in a people business.
We haven't even hit our 5th year anniversary. And so there are so many people that think about the meatball shop as a insanely fast growing company. And then there are equally as many people that think we should be opening much faster because the concept is quote unquote brilliant, right? And like and you know, Dan and I literally the funny part about this whole thing is that we didn't come to this concept as like, oh my God, this is a brilliant idea. Like, that's not at all what happened. It was literally, it like fell off a shelf. And so I think when we think about growing, it's very similar to that, which is it's an organic thing. And, you know, Dan and I have had countless debates about opening more stores. But really, we're growing as fast as we can, and as fast as the business will allow us to grow. And I feel like once we get to a point, which is also on the table right now, where we're going to have to push it into fifth gear and actually actively go out and pound the pavement, finding stores and opening them and making deals all the time, that hasn't been the path. You look at Dan and I, and like, we're not your typical restaurateurs. You know, we're two guys that grew up in New York City, literally working in restaurants, and we're just passionate about this business. And, you know, obviously we grew up and matured and have like real lives today, and are pretty fortunate for the situation that we're in. But ultimately, we're two guys that, that don't take ourselves too seriously all the time. Some, of course, there are times where you have to be serious, but you know, our
funerals.
Yeah, our business is our, and our philosophy and our culture is built on, literally, like New York City high school upbringing. That's like really what it is. Like New York City public school, high school, like New York City public high school shit, and like, and people love that. Like, it is what it is, the culture when you walk into the meatball shop, the music that we play, the energy that Dan and I have together when we're not fighting, the whole thing is like, was built on this like New York City thing that two kids grew up together and you know, and it works, you know, it works, and we don't take ourselves seriously. I mean, we have a truck that drives all over the city. And big graffiti on the back of the truck. It says, "Eat my balls." And like, we don't get shit for it because people...
Because they eat them.
Because they like them.
Because they eat them.
And they like it. And like, you know, I mean, it couldn't be more perfect for the two of us. Because the truth is,
why would you want to grow up? Like, when people are like, "You should grow up," you're like, why would you want to grow up? Like, people are like, "Oh, I had so much fun when I was younger, but now you have to grow up." Like, okay, well, that's what you have to do. Please feel free to grow up. I'm going to continue to enjoy myself. And that's that.
I really think
modern day Peter Pan, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Jump on board.